Hello, I'm Jeremy Rivera, your unscripted podcast host. I'm here with Seth Trammell. Why don't you give yourself an introduction and tell us why we should trust you?
I'm Seth Trammell. I'm the current director of SEO over at Client Boost, running our SEO product over there. Been here since about August, so I'm still new, but I've been I was director formerly at an agency called Grow. Been in and around SEO for a number of years, and I'm one of those folks that keeps my finger on the pulse of what's going on. Very heavily invested in the news wire, the news stream, what's going on. Big follow always of folks like Barry Schwartz and Glenn Gabe and Lily Ray. Shout outs to my industry heroes somewhat. But these are the folks who help keep me up to date on things, and that's the start, I guess, why you should trust me.
Sounds good. What type of niches or industries have you optimized for, and which was the hardest to get a foothold in?
So my last agency was very e-commerce focused. A lot of Shopify sites. I will say, like, I think e-commerce is one that is a little easier at times. The goals are a little bit more clearly defined, I think. Places where people go to search are a little broader. Sometimes it's easier to find an audience sometimes. Having, said, like, where are the challenges within that? I will say there are certain verticals in there that just represent, I think, right now, because of changes that Google's made, some kind of monumental challenges. And one of those is skincare and beauty. Clients who, are out there producing, smaller businesses that are making their own face creams and things like that are having a really hard time in Google right now competing with the big boxes, the Ultas, the Sephoras, and Amazon as well. Just finding that the space available for these, little brands who specialize in a particular kind of thing, it's tough to get in there, to get into kind of the big broad spaces anymore. They're all kind of taken up. Over here at Client Boost, a lot of what we do is B2B SaaS. And I will go ahead and say it, B2B SaaS is a little bit more challenging. You got to dig a lot deeper to find some of these niches that folks live in and find the angles for some of these products sometimes where your volumes of who you're trying to reach become much, much smaller and contracted as you've got services that just you're trying to find a very narrow segment of the population that this is going to appeal to.
That is very true. And I think with B2B SaaS too, it is interesting because sometimes you're marketing to a person who is not the decision maker, and you have to prepare. And good marketing looks like finding a way to grease the skids and remove the friction of actually getting this, $2,000 a month, $20,000 a month software approved by the higher ups. What kind of extra documentation is the CFO going to want to see? What could you possibly do to help pad the numbers to justify this as, a junior marketing person or a junior person on the team finds it and brings it to the boss? So it's weird, like you're trying to market and show up for searches for one person to bring that data to yet another person.
Right. How can you make them a cheerleader for you within their organization? How can you let them advocate for you and let them go and push that charge forward?
Yeah, exactly. I've played around in the B2B SaaS space in a couple of different capacities, both as in-house working for Raven Tools, in-house working for TapClicks, and then subcontracting for agencies, and then directly freelance consulting with different SaaS products like Lead Truffle, who's trying to generate leads for, smooth the lead transition and qualification process for SaaS. What has been some of the good messaging, because I know you guys focus on performance metrics, so that's both PPC, and I know you're heading up the SEO program now. So what are some strategies that you've been grabbing a hold of that's taken the fight to the market in the SaaS space?
One of the things that I've been trying to tackle, and it isn't actually even exclusive just to B2B SaaS, is figuring out the space that good content lives in these days. It's become increasingly difficult to justify sometimes, you know, the need to have enough or good content on a site because, one, clicks are rapidly evaporating. Google is, you know, not, you know, taking that content, not always properly attributing it. And then two, a lot of legacy media just gets a pass and they get in easy, even if they're not trying as hard sometimes as other worthy sites. And the bar for entry is higher. But then, you know, there's always and I've actually been hearing it more and more often in the last year or two when talking with like prospects or clients is, well, you know, that stuff doesn't convert. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. It doesn't. And the kind of argument I've been making is it was never supposed to. And that's kind of the wrong way to look at it. It's not, you're catching someone when they're signing on or when they're, you know, clicking on your blog to come and look at you. They're coming to answer a question. They're not coming to buy a product. They're not coming to even be sold a product. And so if you're looking at that through a lens of, well, we need to figure out how we get them to convert from there, I think you're looking at it the wrong way. Where I've tried to move the conversation is it's not SEO's job necessarily to nab that conversion, but they can help your other channels by basically providing new users that you can then find ways that you can remarket to, retarget to, and use. I really like to leverage, you know, email SMS off the blog as a way to take that user who came in looking to answer a question. If you provide really good content and then you provide a good value proposition for why they should give up their email, you get them to sign on, and then you get to stay in their ear. You get to stay top of mind for them. And so the conversion becomes not, did they buy the product? Did they get the service? It's, did they give us their email? And then, yeah, will that channel get the last click attribution? For sure. But that's where we need to just open up our thinking. And that's what I've tried to open up clients to is like, let's reframe this. There's value to be had here. We just have to look at it the right way.
That's so true. I was just talking about this with Michael McDougall of Right Thing Agency about how we're really myopic. We've been really myopic in SEO about what it is that is SEO. But really, you know, like what we track and count as conversions or rankings even, you know, with the diminishing returns on how many clicks we get on things, we really do have to consider, you know, those multi-channel wins. And we have to, you know, show good business sense and be able to connect and play well with other departments and be able to argue for content strategy that, you know, it's not tied into running, getting a demo, but it is tied into getting, you know, more emails into our list. And maybe outreach, you know, for link building shouldn't be so myopic since we're seeing, you know, no followed was for LLMs had as the same correlation score as followed links.
They simply don't care about that tag.
They simply don't care about that, which means that there's suddenly more value in outreach that isn't as heavily focused on followed links, DA, DR. Instead, maybe, you know, the best play for that I've recommended for B2B SaaS is, hey, how can you find, you know, a nexus of care that is attached to your same target profile of person, but if they're shopping out different pieces of the funnel or they're providing different, you know, value collaborations, where if you reached out, you could probably send an email to their audience, you trade it for an equal number of sends to your list, and that A to B, you know, that connection there could then open the door to you providing them with a blog post or a resource, them providing you with a resource blog post, tap into their social media audience, interview their SEO director, interview their product manager, like open up your mind beyond rankings and think, okay, well, how can my content strategy maybe go and be a team player?
Yeah, I think, yeah, these kind of things are vital if, as SEOs, we want to survive into the future. You brought up a really good point. It just feels like it's been so myopic. And I think that's been like transferred over to who we work with. They look at us as like in this silo that we should, you know, we should have to provide everything all on our own. And we just too often forget, like, no, we're in an ecosystem. Like, there's a lot of moving pieces here, and they can work together if we want them to. They can support each other if we try, but if we, and maybe too, that's just a part of like agency life where, mm-hmm. you know, like, well, we've been contracted to work on just this one thing, and then they've got this other agency doing this other thing sometimes, or maybe they're doing that in-house. But it's like, nah, you've got this whole ecosystem of marketing that's going on, and everybody can play together if we try. And it's going to be vital for us to do so if we're going to be able to show the kind of value that we're bringing beyond just clicks and impressions and that kind of stuff.
I definitely agree. There's an aspect of whether you're an agency, a freelance, or in-house, really finding the opportunity to, you know, open up that cross-channel, because there is a divide. When you are at an agency, you do have to do the extra work and cannot be locked down to a model of, okay, these are the four things we do per month and we get paid.
Yeah, and it's those kinds of models that I've worked in before that just, it rubs me wrong when I'm just in there, when I was in there doing it. It's like, yeah, okay, I'm fulfilling the scope of work, but is that providing any value? And so it's a key evolution is, you know, as an agency or as a freelance, it's like, yeah, you got to have, you know, like, here's what I do, but you have to be thinking about always the value that that's going to be bringing. And if you're thinking like for their end goals first, then you're acting like a partner. And then that's key to actually, you know, retaining customers, retaining clients and that kind of stuff, I think. And so I think it's going to be very soon. It's going to be the time you're either going to evolve or die.
It's true. What do you think of the current state of SEO? Let's keep it limited there. I'm curious. I don't want to feed my opinion. I want to see what your opinion, what's the state of
affairs? Yeah, no need
to
feed because I've got plenty. So, you know, we've been through the yearly SEO is dead. It's actually still, you know, going on, the yearly tradition. But then, you know, this year it's been bolstered a lot by, you know, large publishers coming out and then saying SEO is dead. And then their alternative that they, you know, feed you once you read the article past that headline is actually, if you still do good classic SEO, that's actually what you need to do. It's like, okay, so SEO is not dead. We just want to give it a new name all of a sudden. When we get into thinking about like the, you know, GEO or LLMO, I think GEO is starting to win in terms of like naming conventions, but I'm still not sold on any of it in terms of like naming. But it's been dominant, right? It's been mm-hmm. top of mind for a lot of people, a lot of decision makers, particularly in both, you know, one in a way it's good because, hey, yeah, this stuff is here. We do need to think about it. But then it also gets a little bit toxic where we overinvest and we think about this stuff too much and we don't think about, all right, well, what are the real table stakes with when it comes to, you know, optimizing around just showing up in these searches or not even searches, these conversations sometimes. Mm. And I think that's the part that is, so there's a couple obvious, I think, issues with it. My biggest one has been there's not enough really good data that shows like concretely when and where you show up. So that makes developing strategies a little difficult because you don't actually get to always see firsthand those results. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a big market right now of providing, you know, types of data that might show this. But I have a personal belief that there's like a bit of a fundamental flaw in all of them, which is it's really hard. And I don't know if it's something that they can necessarily overcome, but like it's really hard to mimic how people are actually using these tools. It's yeah. really hard to go with that multi-shot prompting and see what gets teased out, you know, three or four prompts down the road off that initial one to really understand, because that's kind of where decisions get made.
Yeah.
I will say, though, there was a really, really interesting study that I just saw come out that showed that we had been told, I think, you know, for the last better part of the last year that traffic coming off of LLMs converts better than traffic elsewhere. And there was this pretty good size study done that showed actually no, That's not the case. It was focused on e-commerce, and it showed that across most of the tangible metrics that we would look at, LLMs fared worse than just about every traditional channel other than paid social. And it was like, I saw that, like, my spirits rose a little bit. I had a little bit more bounce in my step that day. So it's like, okay, that's a win. Like, because to me, it always kind of made, it didn't make sense that they were so much better converting. It didn't seem to line up. And so having some data that says, hey, maybe that's not the case was good. And, it's just, a shot in the arm for SEO, a shot in the arm for paid search as well, to be like, hey, no, people still do come to us. And one of my beliefs too is that in the industry, in marketing, in some of these spaces, we overestimate how average people, how normal people use these tools, because we're enmeshed in it every day. People at decision making levels, they're thinking about it and enmeshed in it more so than the average person.
Yeah,
I think there are people who, yeah, they've given over, like, yeah, I do everything ChatGPT now. I think that's a really small minority. I think the average flow, and I'm not the only one saying this, but I think the average flow is people go on Google, figure out, like, when they're looking to buy something or get a service, they'll get some idea, like, they'll go on Google, search for it, get some ideas of who's in the space. Then they'll go to ChatGPT and start asking questions about the brands that they saw. Then, based on what ChatGPT tells them, when they're ready to make a decision, they'll go back on Google, do a branded search for their final choice, and then that's when they'll go ahead and make their purchase. And so I think that's the kind of loop we get right now that is kind of more of a, that would probably align more with what most people are doing when they're utilizing these types of tools.
I think what's interesting, I was interviewing Adrian Dahl, and he had that rumor stat too, and he dug into it and he found that the citations and references, both in AI overview and LLMs, refer to one particular article, and that article consisted of a single data point for a single site, indicating a higher conversion rate for ChatGPT. And that, in our conversation around that, was that's kind of the problem of relying on these tools to do the shorthand of, maybe they are pulling from a source that gets cited multiple times, but at the end of the day, like, it's a singular data point from a single study.
Yeah. And what is the veracity of that data? And that's is one of the big limitations of the models, is it's not their job to vet these sources fully. It's there to, they're just prediction machines. They just want to tell you what word should come next.
Yes, yes, that's what Brooks of SEO Tarek says. If you ask it to, GPT will lie to you. Claude will lie to you.
You didn't have to ask it to. It does that natively.
You don't even have to. You could say that its job is literally just to lie to you, in that it's selling that it's information that is true when it is just an answer engine. That's the kind of the deceptive thing about it, is like, Google is now saying in position, we want to be the answer engine of the internet. And so we want to organize the data of the internet. And when it comes down to it, just because you're giving an answer, that's not fact. That's not necessarily true. That's not even necessarily real. There's no responsibility to accuracy. There's stepping away from that, don't be evil Google tagline even further.
Yeah, even further than removing it from your documentation.
Yeah, exactly. You remove that. We didn't say that we wouldn't be evil, and now we're actively, going a step further in describing ourselves to become something that has no responsibility to the end user.
Right. An answer in and of itself is not sufficient. That's what these things do. They'll provide you an answer to anything you ask. They're just currently not weighted or incentivized to not provide an answer if they can't. Like, they've tailored the experience to be like, oh, well, the worst experience you can have is if it doesn't have an answer. I would argue that no, the worst experience you can have is when it gives you an answer that's really wrong, and it's so confident about it that you believe it.
Yes.
And
yes.
So, yeah, I think the incentivization right now for, is off. And I think, perhaps there will be changes down the road where we see these things, develop a little bit more, responsibility in that region. I think it will be in their best interests too. You know, when we think about things like Google's, you know, EEAT model, it's actually not the worst thing in the world. Like some of those ideals, they make sense.
Yes.
To have that. It's just it needs to be applied accurately.
It's funny to me that Google has such a layered, intricate, you know, system of description, of clarity of authorship. Where did this come from? Is this the trustworthy source? Is this scraped? Or is this just duplicating, you know, other people's opinions? AI overview is
right.
Nothing new. It's just synthesized. It's scraped content.
Just faster and more of it.
Just faster and more of it. So it is so hypocritical of Google to have so many bars, so many criteria that it pushes out there for EEAT, for trustworthiness, experience, authenticity. And at the same time, it's running AI overviews on now, what, 3/4 of people also ask queries?
Yeah. And, you know, trying so hard to force AI mode down our throats. And, you know, it's, there's the stuff in there, it makes a lot of sense. And I've always argued too that, like, the internet has been poisoned and SEOs have their role that they've played in that. You talked about, like, you know, the scraped content that's not adding anything to any conversation, that's just the regurgitation of a few other articles that got put out before it. You know, that stuff, you know, for the last 4 or 5 years ruled the internet and people got tired of it. And I really think now savvy users out there are looking for things like, are looking for those same things that Google says looking for, that authorship. They're looking for those bylines. They're looking for, why should I trust you? If I'm going to sit down and read this article, if I'm going to give you any amount of my time,
yeah,
you got to prove that you're worth it. And you can do that really quickly if you do a good job in the byline and you lay out why I should trust you. And then it's Google's job to take those same signals, those same credentials, and make sure that stuff makes it up above the schlock that is, you know, running rampant.
So then that turns around and it should inform our content strategies. That should inform, hey, I'm going to make, you know, really solid bottom of the funnel articles that actually take the time to explain what is the difference between the asphalt mix of chemicals that we use for our driveways versus what gets done, and how does that impact, you know, the lifetime value of your home if you are expecting to resurface in 10 years versus 5 years because you took the time to take our slightly higher bid, you know, like, but doing it in a, you know, taking the time to address the bottom of the funnel concerns that AI overviews, they don't have that in their training data, you know, to get the more granular, to get the more niche insights of what is the difference on this precast wall, you know, concrete wall. Why should I care? Well, you need to talk to an expert about the installation because he's going to know what the contractors are citing for the city versus the specs and details or shop drawings that they might need to present to a homeowner. So getting into the niche, getting into the expertise, maybe with long form content, like my previous guest was saying, Jonathan Schuessler said that he thinks as much focus and as value as we get out of short form content now, really long form is the best source of short form content.
Yeah. And I agree with that. Like the rewards from long form content are kind of less than ever, but the value of it, I think, is still there. We just have to be a little bit more savvy with how we're going about it. And we have to try harder these days, I think, to get into the right spaces. And you really, I mean, that's the thing. You have to put effort into the content if you want it to be of value to anybody. It always should have been that way,
yeah,
honestly. But, you know, it was easy to put in a little bit of effort and get a big reward in the past. And so these days, will things clap back or you know, swing back the other way where people become so overwhelmed and disgusted with, you know, the kind of state of like just artificially generated content that's got, you know, no backing to it, and will they swing over and be like, no, I'm only gonna, you know, you got to prove a human touch this before I'll even go near it. I don't know, we'll get there, but I think people are gonna move that way. It's,
yeah,
we're seeing it with like with Sora too, and like, you know, some of the that video generation stuff that's going on. It's like,
oh yeah,
what value is this creating? Like, why should I consume any of this, as opposed to, you know, somebody who's taking the time and making a real video as a real person. Like, it's starting to turn people off, I think.
Yeah, it's a moment of you thought so much about whether you could, you never stopped to think if you should.
Yes, the classic Jeff Goldblum quote. I love employing that.
It's very true. So give me your hot take. What's the junk food right now of the SEO industry that's going to give us a tummy ache?
Oh, gosh, you know, it's hard not to say just like, I think it's going to be listicles and affiliate style content. I think not that SEO is necessarily producing it, but it's one of the more reliable ways. Getting in it is one of the more reliable ways to show up on ChatGPT when products are being compared and recommended. I've seen others in the industry kind of spotlight, and I agree heavily that ChatGPT should be incentivized to curb their diet of this kind of content, because everybody's caught on that you can do this.
Yeah.
I think one of the most, and probably the thing in SEO where this relates most, is the brand writing the comparison content themselves, where they put themselves at the top, of course. And it's like, man, I thought we got away from that. Like, I always was like, no, you can't do that. Nobody likes this stuff. But apparently ChatGPT does, and it will cite it as, you know, valid research in the space of, you know, why I should choose this oat bar over that oat bar or whatever. And that's the stuff, the overinvestment in it right now, just because it works.
Yeah.
That's going to leave us with the tummy ache later, when all of a sudden they get it together, they figure out, oh yeah, this isn't a great idea, and then that stuff stops working altogether.
It's hard because it's like, oh my gosh, like, give me something that works in SEO like really well, and you're like, well, I mean, we can, you know, very easily find 4, 5, 10, 15 places to publish, you know, listicles where we're at the top. And I guess that's, yeah, it's hard to say no to the junk food because it's right there. You know, it is going to fill that marketing belly. I guess you can always try to be wholesome about it and be like, hey, if we're going to do a comparison, but let's actually get our expert to talk about what is the real difference between these two.
Like, what Wirecutter does. They're the gold standard for product comparisons in a lot of ways. Now, I've heard rumors that they're not always, you know, doing everything that they say they do. They lay out and they're like, this is how we test things and whatever. I'm not here to do that. But like, that's useful information. Like,
sure. That's,
and I don't want to say like affiliate content isn't bad. I use it to help make decisions, but I'm very choosy about who I take that information from. I want to see that, you know, you've used the product. I want to see that you've taken it through some reasonable tests before I'm going to trust you as the person who's going to help inform my decision.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, if you follow those kinds of, like, it goes back to EAT, like, you got to show that you're worth the trust. You got to give people a reason to trust you, just like you did with me at the beginning of this podcast. Like, people need a reason to trust you. It's on you to take the steps, do the hard work that it takes to earn that. But just, yeah, right now it's too easy to get away with not doing that.
Fair enough. Tell us again where you're at. If people want to find you on social media, find some resources from your company or brand, where can they look you up? I'll add it to the show notes.
Right now, you can find everything over on clientboost.com. I am on LinkedIn. I am not active. I'm probably going to change that. I probably need to get a little bit more active. I lurk on Twitter. I don't engage. I lurk on Reddit. I don't engage. So you can't find me in those places, and I'd rather, but right now, Client Boost, and then over on LinkedIn is where I'll start to post, some content here coming up soon.
Thanks so much for your insight, and we'll see you around. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeremy.